do we start?
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. Their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for mid-July. Got a big show. I've left y'all with Tim and Bernita. We're going to have three guests on today. John Druckenmiller of Hometown Headlines, also the former editor of the Rome News Tribune, is going to come on with us, talk about money and politics. George Anderson of the Ethics and Government Group is going to come on and talk about some of Sonny Perdue's PAC dealings. George probably knows the ethics of campaign laws and whatnot is better than anybody in Georgia. And he's saying that Sonny Perdue's run afoul of some of the law, and he's going to fill us in. And then finally, Wendy Davis is going to give us a report from the Southeastern Regional Meeting of the DNC in Charlotte. How you doing, Tim?
Pretty good. How are you tonight, David?
Doing well. And I just want to tell all the listeners, if I don't finish up the show, had a little bit of a family medical issue come up this weekend, not myself, my wife, and I'm going to be on the start of the show, but there's a good chance I'll be leaving it with Tim, and when the show goes flawlessly, you'll see how unimportant I am to the whole thing and how Bernita and Tim can handle these things swimmingly. And I'm thinking we're going to bring Bernita on in. Bernita, how you doing?
I am fine, and you?
I'm doing well.
I'm well. Good
evening,
Bernita. How are you?
I am fine.
Yes, and we also have another guest from the 404 right off, and I don't believe this is Mr. Druckenmiller, but we're going to check. Hi, caller from the 404.
Hey, this is Melanie Goo from Blog for Democracy.
Hi, Melanie. Do you have an announcement for us right off the bat?
Well, I just want to tell you what a great job I think you guys are doing, and this is kind of a fan call, that's all. And I just want to put in a little plug. We're going to have a blog-a-thon to send Bernita to Chicago this week, and we'd like for everybody to help us, but the main thing I wanted to tell you is how much I enjoy the show and how much I look forward to it every week, and that's a privilege usually reserved for HBO series. So I just think you guys do a great job.
Well, thank you, and I want to send a thank you to you for setting up the event last Tuesday with Dr. Drew Weston. Very, very informative, and throughout the week I'm going to be sharing some of that, and I wanted to kind of let everybody know that Dr. Weston's going to be on the show August 12th, in conjunction with another announcement we're going to make a little bit later.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think everybody will be as impressed, you know, by him as we were. I think he's really onto something, and I think he can help Democrats do a lot better when it comes to our messaging and things. So, I was happy to do it, and happy to have the folks turn out to be there, and it was great. But I'm going to let y'all go, and I'm going to listen online, and I just want to tell you how much I love the show.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Mel.
Thanks.
Hi.
Yes, well, Melanie beat me to it, but that's okay. I was going to mention about you trying to raise the money to go to Daily Kos, and, of course, I want everybody to know that if you go, which I'm assuming this is going to happen, you're going to come back and give us a great report, both written on the blogs and, you know, where people can ask questions and hear the audio version, if you will, on the Kudzu Vine.
Yeah, it all came about last week, literally. I got a call, and I thank John Fleck for putting it out there, about they were looking for, women, minority bloggers in Georgia.
Yeah.
And he sent my name in, and they read some of the stuff and heard the Blog Talk Radio and thought I'd be a good voice. So I was pretty excited about that. And this really came out of a three people idea. In California, some bloggers, they knew that there was, you know, voices that weren't heard and voices that weren't seen at the yearly Kos event. So they asked me, you know, if they helped raise money, could Georgia bloggers help? And I was like, yeah, I guess I put it out there.
Yes, well, I've already sent you a donation, maybe not the biggest donation you'll get, but I guess every little bit counts.
Every little bit counts. I mean, it's going to be pretty cool because they're doing it for 16 people, and they actually have someone coming from Japan.
Wow.
And a blogger from South Dakota also.
Well, tell us, what I thought you were just going to the convention. It sounds like you've got a special role. What's that role going to be?
I'm going to be part of the Southern Caucus.
Okay, and so you might be more of a panelist, if you will?
Yes, they're going to do some other mini events.
Yes.
And for one thing, the 16 of us are going to get together and all talk, which should be really exciting. I'm really excited about that part, just to hear people's different opinions about how they're moving the political, you know, sphere in their own states, like in Alabama and in Texas, and, you know, what they bring. So I'm excited about learning that and seeing what the response is in their own states, and especially the woman who's coming from Japan. She used to work in the U.S., and now she's in Japan doing some activist work. So I think getting her international perspective would be very interesting. And I'm going to try to get a press pass, you know, for my duties on Blog Talk Radio as a, you know, radio person, so I can do some interviews. All the presidential candidates will be there.
Excellent. Well, and that will be great. And so basically the people at Daily Kos are listening to samples of the Kudzu Vine to hear your great work.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Great. Okay. Well, this week in Georgia, we got a few things coming up. We've got two big elections, at least on Tuesday. We have the Macon Mayor's primary and, I guess, city council races, all the municipal elections there. And we finally are going to find out who the 13th congressional representative from Georgia will be in the 10th congressional runoff. Tim, any thoughts?
Well, you know, I've still got to wonder over in the 10th if we're going to have maybe a 60-40, 65-35 type race and consider that close, to be honest with you. I'm not sure that Dr. Brown is going to be able to make this thing competitive. Let's face it, Senator Whitehead is the candidate of the Republican machine. As Bernita mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that machine has now kicked into gear. And so I just got to wonder if there's going to be any drama at all Tuesday night over there.
I think that Whitehead will pull it out. If it's close, I think Brown has to have feel good about that. But it's just the turnout's going to be so very low, and you would think that the real hardcore activists that sing from the sheet music would be the core of that turnout.
Yeah, you do.
I'm going to go with Tim. I agree completely with what Tim said.
Yes. Sounds like we're singing from the same song music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to actually, I think we were talking something recently about Tennessee and not Georgia, but I wanted to mention it. Lamar Alexander, it's looking like he may become the president of his alma mater, Vanderbilt, which would open up that seat, be it a special election or even if he timed it and waited somehow to the 2008 election. Do y'all think that would be a chance for a Democrat to pick up that seat in particular? I guess Harold Ford Jr. ran last time. That makes a lot of sense. I've also read an article about 2 years ago that Tim McGraw, the country singer, is a big Democrat, and, of course, he would be another very interesting name for our party.
And that's
I think they should run Harold Ford.
Bernita, you're saying Harold Ford would be a...
I think they should run Harold Ford again. I mean, basically all they'd have to do is go find out the districts he had low turnout in.
Yes.
I mean, he has the operation still in, and he has now his connections with the DLC.
Yes, I mean, I think the Harold Ford race, basically, it was kind of like in pro wrestling. When both guys were fighting fair, Harold Ford Jr. had the upper hand, and then, Corker pulled out a loaded sock or a pair of brass knuckles and, you know, hit him where the referee wasn't looking, if you will, with that, at least pair of dirty blows appealing to race.
Yep.
Would Lamar Alexander, though, choose to do that right now? What I mean there is you're looking at a special election, then a year from now you're looking at another election if all of that happens. I'm wondering if the Republican Party would ask him to stay on for a little bit longer.
Certainly the Republican Party is going to ask him not to do any of this. I just don't know how he feels about his college, Vanderbilt, and B, you know, getting back into education and doing that job, because this was a guy that was Secretary of Education, so education must be an issue that's very important to him. And so I kind of think that, you know, there may be some appeal. I don't know how much he likes Washington or dislikes Washington, but obviously being in the Republican Party at this point, can't be the most fun thing when you have to answer for some policies you may or may not agree with, depending on either your party's right-wing base or President Bush.
Well, that's
true. Has he stood with Bush the whole time?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. He's at times, like on immigration, you're torn between your party's right-wing base and Bush. Then you've got Iraq. You know, maybe all those Republican senators don't think like we do on Iraq, but you have to think that, you know, the way that things get swept under the rug and just ignored, that you know, common sense would have to prevail, and they would have to say, hey, there's some questions that you'd be asking. I'm not in a position because of my party affiliation to ask those.
Well, he's one of the strong proponents for the Iraq study group recommendations.
Yes.
So in that, he already differs with the president.
Yes. So that may be kind of something for him to kind of force him, because I'm sure there's a lot of Republicans that, you know, probably like the model of a Phil Gingrich, and I get the idea that Bob Corker's this way, somebody that's kind of a yes man that does what they're told.
There's
another thing too, guys, that we got to remember about this situation in Tennessee, and that is, what if Fred Thompson should be the Republican nominee for president next year? That might change the way both the Democrats and the Republicans view and handle this race up here. It might drive a big-name Democrat away from that race, may drive a bunch of big-name Republicans right into that race.
That's true.
And you know they're really good friends, Fred Thompson and Lamar Alexander, because, you know, it could be just one big old setup.
Okay, I was going to mention one more thing about this. Should Thompson get the nomination and Alexander move aside, keep the name Marsha Blackburn in your mind. You know, she switched off of Mitt Romney's campaign, and she's now running Thompson's campaign in Tennessee. Those two are also good friends. She might jump into that Senate race.
Yes, I mean, I don't know anything about her speech style or much about her issues, but I do know that she could probably do some really nice direct mail. She's very photogenic, and so that would be a name and that you would think would put in play up there for the Republicans.
Well, she's a very, very attractive woman. She's a very good speaker. She is very conservative. If you look up the word conservative in the dictionary, her picture should be beside it. And she is from south of Nashville in the 7th District there. That's the most Republican area of the state of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Now, Tim, when you say attractive, what do we mean by this?
Well, I mean, she...
Have we talked about how Fred Thompson's not attractive?
You mean physically? I'm going to be honest. No, I don't think he's attractive at all.
Oh, he's got
attractive, politically attractive.
He's got a face for TV.
I'm just trying to make sure we're a balanced radio station.
Yes. Well, and speak it, let's bring it back to our topics that we have planned and our guests. I believe Mr. John Druckenmiller has joined us.
David, good afternoon. How are you all doing tonight?
Doing well.
Good, sir.
Great. Let me speak up for Fred Thompson real quick. I'm all for balding fat people, being one myself. There's that balance you need right there.
Well, Mr. Druckenmiller, I gave a little intro to you that you currently publish the Hometown Headlines. I don't think I mentioned that you teach journalism at Berry College. But you've worked in a lot of areas around Georgia, so you know the state, you know politics. But you had written an article recently for your publication, The Druck Report, that you can buy, you know, local newsstands in Northwest Georgia, about money and politics and how it's going to play here in 2008. Just kind of tell us just the basics of why you wrote this article and what you're seeing.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Here it is. A year from today, we'll be going to the polls for the election day. It's the primary day. It's July 15, 2008. The money we're going to see start unrolling starting right now. We saw the state, all the candidates actually, put out their June 30th disclosure forms, and already you're seeing, you know, $16,000 here, $5,000 there. Wait till the end of the year. You know, they got to collect the money between now and the end of the year. They can't collect during the General Assembly, this being the state candidates. You're going to see races like the one we had here last year for District 13, a House seat for Katie Dempsey and Bob Puckett. You're going to see that race once again possibly touch $200,000, if not more.
Wow.
And that money's going to be going toward, you know, it's going to be a campaign advisors, it's going to be signs, it's going to be internet. Radio was huge in that election toward the last few days. it's funny, as much as, you know, despite all the free communication like this show and websites and all, it is amazing the amount of advertising that's going on. Even as the so-called world gets smaller, the money to advertise a campaign, even the smaller campaigns like District 13 for Greater Rome, is just huge. It's going to be a lot bigger in 2008.
Yes, and so what you look mainly at local races and how that's exploding. And what is that meaning for the statewide races, you think?
Well, I wonder, in Saxby Chamblee, I'm not sure how much money. I didn't check his. I meant to check if I went on the air tonight. Look at Phil Gingrey. Gingrey had, I believe, $500,000 in the bank already for his house race. Of course, Frank, we're all hearing the rumors. They may be discounted now that Roy Barnes may even be in that race. Gingrey spent, I think, $1 million plus last time in that race with the gentleman out of Carroll County. And that guy, Yankee, spent, $49?
I think Patrick spent a little more than that, but certainly, I mean, he didn't have, you know, it would be like decimal point zero zero,
oh, yeah,
and then the number percent of what Phil Gingrey had for a budget.
The money is going to be starting coming in. I think these statewide races, the Saxby-Chambliss race, is going to be, I think, a very contentious race. I think we're going to see a lot of, we're seeing already what Dale Cardwell, of course, I'm drawing a blank.
Vernon Jones and
Thank
Rand
you very
Knight.
Much. They're already Vernon. I mean, all these people here, they're already in the race on the Democratic side. I don't think you'll see any opposition on the Republican side. It won't be a primary battle there. But that's going to be a dogfight. That has got to be one of the seats that's teetering right now, especially with, you know, the popularity and such in Congress and with the president. I think you're going to see that's going to have to be a $10 million race, minimum.
Well, you would think that, you know, our side could raise that. I will say this. My thinking was when the Democratic Party lost the majority that the money would definitely change a lot of ways, because before, the Democratic Party had the incumbency, which was a tool to raise money, and then the Republican
Correct.
Party had the profile and demographics of some of their supporters as being wealthy, and they could raise money, and it kind of made for a fair fight, if you will. Now they have the incumbency and the profile. And so I thought a lot of these races that we would be, we meaning Democrats, would be kind of behind the eight ball more so than the Republican challenges were, say, 10 years ago.
It's amazing. I just want to, as we were talking, I just pulled up Phil Gingrey's latest campaign report through June 30th. Phil now has $626,000 in the bank for that election.
Yes, and I knew he raised over $1 million between 2002, 2004, he raised $1 million. He was one of the top money raisers. I don't think he spent that much money in the race in 2004 against Rick Crawford. I really don't know what all money he's spending against Patrick Pillion, but it seems like I'm sitting there going, where did that $400,000, $500,000 go in expenditures?
It went to go help another candidate?
Yeah, a lot of it did. There's a lot of sharing among the candidates now, and especially in this last cycle. And one thing about this race, the District 11 race also, I mean, we just had the district boundaries change in this last election. But still, this House seat does touch on some of the major markets, which means they do, if they do any kind of political advertising on TV, and I guess they got to do it on TV. I mean, you still have some Cobb County here. May have a little bit of Chattanooga market coming in here, the Atlanta market, Chattanooga market coming in as well. So, I mean, the money, I think part of that money is going out to pay, you know, some of the major TV markets, even though this district is now really centered in Floyd and Polk and Bartow and that type of thing.
Yeah, so, well, and you know, everywhere from Chattooga on down, everywhere is in the Atlanta media market. I mean, obviously,
yep.
We get a little Chattanooga overrun, but Tim could speak better to Chattooga County, but I know in Floyd, I would say most households watch the local Atlanta news, not the local Chattanooga news.
So if you have cable, you still get your choice, I guess, and they're going to try to cover that a little bit. And I think we're still pretty much of a cable. I mean, satellite's gaining here, but I think we're still pretty much a cable market here. So,
yeah,
I think a lot of that money kind of went that way, a lot of TV money. But Renita said, that's also a lot of money was shared with other candidates. We saw Gingrey's name on a lot of the GOP candidates here in Floyd County last time.
Oh, yes, giving money locally down the food chain, if you will. Now, the disclosure reports, obviously they could collect money up until – midnight on the 30th of June, but they have to get their disclosure reports in pretty soon, and I was expecting more to trickle in by now.
Today was the last day.
Today, so
yeah.
We'll probably by tomorrow we'll see all the postings and some of the.
Oh, they're out. They're out right now. They had a file by July 9th.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, the state one.
I checked
state one.
Saturday morning, and I mean, because like I said, I've had this family issue and I'm able to check as much. But I checked on Saturday morning. A lot of the contending Democrats for U.S. Senate. Cardwell, Jones, Rand Knight, they weren't up yet. And I was just
Federal races were due today.
Federal races were due today. Because those are the ones I'm real curious about. It's those.
Well, they said Caldwell's raised $50,000 and has $43,000 on cash on hand.
What about Vernon? You see his numbers yet?
Vernon's numbers haven't posted, and neither has Rand Knight. But we do know that Rand Knight has raised $11,500 online.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, he's definitely done it online compared to Vernon Jones's Act Blue account had $10 in it.
Yes, and that's something. And Rand Knight, this is a candidate. I think the real internet savvy people know about his campaign, but I wouldn't think, and John, you can speak to this. A lot of just regular journalists probably aren't familiar with Rand Knight, are they?
No, not at all. I mean, you're hearing the two names, and that's it right now. And that will change as we get a little closer. But still, you're hearing Vernon, you're hearing Caldwell, and that's it. You have two high-profile, you know, candidates, and who knows? This other one, I think the internet grassroots thing, that may catch on. You know, it's interesting to watch. We're about to enter a period right now. Here we are, 1 year out from the primary today. Think about what's going to happen in the next couple of months. We're going to see the presidential guys really crank and women crank it up as we get closer. They can't campaign during the holidays because no one's going to be listening. So it's either going to be, you know, September, October, mid-November, some in December, and then we'll get swamped in January and February with our election, what, February 5th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We are about to be bombarded. And you think about it, once that stops, you know, that goes away. Starting February, we'll still be in General Assembly, end of March, you know, early April. Then we're going to start seeing our other primary come into play. We're in for the longest election year that I can recall.
Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't create burnout on voters.
Oh, I think we're going to see that. I mean, you got people who are mad already. And, you know, literally, we're going to – within days, we're going to start seeing the presidential politics just get, you know, very warm in this state. We're going to be a key state. So now we're going to be flooded with, you know, campaign ads and all starting anytime soon, going into the fall breaks, all good stuff. Heavy through Christmas and, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, resuming again in January. They're going to, you know, drop off in February, and then boom, here comes, you know, here comes Saxby, here comes Dale, here comes Vernon, here comes Ray. It's going to be literally a year. And then the local folks will kick in probably late, you know, late April when qualifying's done. We are in for a year plus of this nonstop campaign ads.
Yes. Now, speaking of the presidential, one of my fears, if you will, and I'll see if you think this is true, Georgia's going to become kind of a mining state. Candidates are going to come into Georgia, raise a lot of money, but then spend very little of it because the state has only changed, you know, hands to the Democratic Party once in the last, say, five cycles or six cycles at this point.
Okay.
I think that they have to because we have 141 delegates.
For the primary, for the generals, what I'm...
Oh, you meant for the general. Oh, okay. General. I thought you were talking about the primary race.
Yes. Now, the primary, I mean, that's going to be, does somebody lock it up? I mean, I think at this point, I mean, I think there's a chance that, you know, Hillary Clinton could have this thing wrapped up quicker than we first anticipated.
Not by February 5th. I think a lot of it's going to come down to that Super Tuesday.
Yes.
Oh, you know, I agree. I think Super Tuesday is going to be the big key for both parties, too.
Yeah.
I think we're going to know very early on. I mean, we won't get out a winner without knowing who the two candidates are.
Yes, because so many delegates will be decided, especially if Florida counts before then. Now, somehow Florida's delegates didn't count, and that kind of threw some off. You could have
Michigan is now debating on when they're going to have their primary. I mean, sometimes they're saying that they may have it January 29th, also the date of South Carolina has it, and then they're saying maybe they'll do it February 5th, but that's a whole lot more delegates.
Yes, I mean, if you got two states like a Michigan and a Florida, and then somehow the DNC didn't count their votes because they didn't go by the prescribed schedule, then you could get more of an open situation where things are more fluid. So
yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yes, we'll be
fun fall coming up.
Yeah.
So, John, do you guys think you can get Bob Puckett back out there again?
Bob Puckett, it's a good question. Bob and I and some other folks having lunch, casual lunch. Coming up, I think, later on this month. You know, he never destroyed his signs or recycled his signs.
Well, that's a good thing. Bob's a good man.
Bob's a good guy. That was that race, I tell you, it was probably, I've been doing this for 30 years, it was probably the race of a lifetime, watching those two go at it. I mean, no one gave Bob a single shred of chance when he declared.
I did.
That's funny. And everybody in this county said, you know, it's a done deal. I mean, Katie is Katie, and Katie has a lot of friends. That campaign, and her campaign manager and I had a lot of shouting matches. And I told him, the guy, I said, look, you mismanaged this campaign. Bob, meanwhile, stuck to what Bob knew best, education, 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 education.
Mm-hmm.
We have 15, 16, 17,000 students in public and private schools in this community. People were looking at education. To come within 168 votes of winning that seat and spending a third of the money she spent was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I personally feel that that race was not lost by what Bob Puckett did or what Katie Dempsey won what she did. That race was won by trickle down, because you look how many more people voted for Bob Puckett that must have voted for Sonny Perdue in the 13th district.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that number. If the Democratic nominee gets 45% to 47%, Bob Puckett gets elected.
Yep.
So
exactly.
Help the trickle down.
That, I think you will see a rematch there this fall. I mean, next fall. I'll just about guarantee it.
Yes. Well, anybody, Tim, Bernita, anything else for Mr. Druckenmiller before I let him go?
Yeah, I'd like to mention one thing to him. You alluded to this earlier about Patrick Tillian. He was so poor that he actually gave me 1 yard sign for this entire county, and
wow.
the word Democrat was misspelled.
Ooh.
On the sign. My question is for the next candidate who might want to run. If you were advising somebody who was going to run in the 11th district, how much money would you say that they would need to raise?
Don't even get involved under $1 million.
$1 million.
$1 million bucks.
Wow.
I mean, you know, Phil's sitting here right now, $626,000, and we're, what, a year and a half away from the election. And you know,
wow.
it's not going to start coming.
Wow.
It's going to keep coming. And the district is so redrawn, you know. And you would think the poor guy, someone better be able to afford a copy of spell check as well. I mean, that's. Well, of course, says Mr. Typo here, but, you know.
Yes.
John, who do you think is the weakest Republican congressman in Georgia right now?
Whew, good question. I really couldn't tell you. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I think Phil, you know, it's going to have to be Roy Barnes or Phil's back in. Nathan Deal. Nathan has declared, right? Nathan is going to run again. Has
yes.
he declared? Anybody know that? Okay.
Sure.
I know he's been there about, you know, just about his sixth or seventh term here. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, and I think it's how you define weak. Whose district has the most Democratic voters of the Republican-held districts? That would be the one that's going to be the special election on Tuesday. As far as, like, weak on who do you see as the weakest, that's all an opinion. I would nominate Phil Gingrich for that pretty quickly with, I guess, Tom Price somewhat behind there.
Let's not leave Westmoreland out.
Yes, but I think he's got a little more going on than the other two, because I think he's risen in the leadership faster than either one have.
I think Sassy Chandler's of Senate seat is the one to watch.
Yeah.
I think that is the one to watch. I mean, the less than enthusiastic embrace he got out of the GOP convention back in, May or something like that. I mean, there's already some base issues there. You get a couple strong Democrats coming at him. I don't know. That's one I think is going to be a real good race to watch.
Is that why Saxby Chambliss has Cheney coming here this week to raise money for him, do you think?
I think he'll have everybody available coming here for him. And I think you'll see him going toward the base, even given Cheney's popularity or non-popularity or the president. You're going to see Saxby bringing in everybody for this election. He needs it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Mr. Druckenmiller, thank you for coming on and sharing with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, and if people listening are in the Northwest Georgia area, you can pick up this article that you spoke of, the newsstands, the Druck Report, full-color magazine, got a nice cover size, if you will, dimensions. Yeah, thanks again.
Thank
all right,
you.
Guys. Y'all take
care.
Bye-bye.
Yes, and I kind of pre-talking about this. I'm not going to make the whole show, so I'm going to use this point to sign out. But y'all continue on like I know y'all will for the next 30 minutes. We should have George Anderson coming on to talk about the ethical issues of Sonny Perdue and Wendy Davis giving us that DNC meeting report.
Okay.
See y'all next
okay.
week.
I hope your life is better.
I hope so, too. Thank you for your for kind wishes.
Okay. Bernita, one thing I wanted to talk to you about while we had a minute was Cindy Sheehan was in Atlanta yesterday. Did you hear about this or this event that she had?
Well, it wasn't her event. Let's start off by that one. Okay. It wasn't specifically started off for her.
Uh-huh.
She kind of was in town, and then she kind of then it became part of the Cindy Sheehan show.
I saw on television where I guess this was some auditorium in North Atlanta somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a huge crowd there to see her. Do you reckon these folks are coming to see her out of curiosity, or are they really subscribing to what she's trying to do?
I think some of it's out of both. I think it's a mix, but I think that original crowd wasn't for Cindy Sheehan. Like I said, the event wasn't originally for her. So they were there for a whole nother reason, to promote a whole nother topic. But yeah. I think it's probably both. If, you know, if I would have attended, it probably would have been just to see what she was on this mission to run against Nancy Pelosi and check her pulse to make sure she was still alive.
Do you think that would actually?
Idea.
Do you actually think it would do any good though for her to run against Pelosi? I was talking to a lady who lives in Pelosi's district, and she told me that the most recent election in which Pelosi had any decent competition at all, she still carried like 81% of the vote. So wouldn't it be an exercise in futility for her to even challenge her?
I think her whole thing is about popularity. It wasn't about running for it. It's about, you know, can she get as much press? And for whatever topic she wants to talk about, it's not about changing the government, because if she's so opposed to government, why would you want to be one of how many, 493 representatives, knowing that, and you're not the leader like Pelosi is, so how much effective change can you really make? It wasn't about leadership, and it wasn't about making a change. It was about getting press, and I think the whole election, her whole campaign spiel would have been on about making, you know, getting press.
So you think this deadline that she's drawn in the sand, in which she says that she expects Congress to begin impeachment proceedings against Bush and Cheney to happen, or she is going to jump into that thing? You really don't think she will jump into this race then?
If she jumps in, I still don't think it's going to be about substance.
Uh-huh.
It's not. I think it's still going to be about Cindy Sheehan and not the issue she represents. George Bush needs to be, you know, impeached. But are you going to really talk about why he needs to be impeached, or are you going to talk about you? I mean, you can't talk about the failures of Nancy Pelosi as our congressional leader, because, you know, she has made progress as a congressional leader. So what's really going to be her attack method? You know what I mean? What's the strategy behind it besides you're bringing more, you know, you just want more attention? I think she's got some attention. It's not even attention deficit. It's attention starved.
Wow.
And who's going to give her money to run against Nancy Pelosi?
That's a very good question.
Isn't Nancy Pelosi a millionaire anyway?
Oh, yeah. She's a millionaire several times over. She's also the Speaker of the U.S. House. She's also very popular in her own district.
And
like
she also was the chair of the California Democratic Party.
There we are.
Okay. I'm thinking, if we're going to go against opponents, why don't you start with a Republican one first?
That's a good idea, and not move to San Francisco, contest one of the Republicans out there in California, where it might do what she's talking about some actual good.
And she could test like a statewide one where you know you can pick up little pockets of votes.
Right.
And actually get a momentum going instead of, let me take on Nancy because I get better press that way.
Moving back into Georgia here, you know, I mentioned earlier that Dick Cheney was coming to Atlanta to raise the money for Saxby Chambliss this week. Seems like it's awfully early to be bringing such a heavyweight out. Do you think that's a sign from the Chambliss campaign that they're a little worried about holding on to that seat?
Oh, I had a different take on it. My take was that he was bringing him in to show that he still had this Republican street card, that he was still down with the administration. That's why Dick was coming in, you know, since his base is not happy. They're still happy with Crazy Dick. Don't ask me why. So I thought that's why he was bringing him in, to look like he was still one of the team members.
So you think that then that if he's worried about a challenge, it's not from the Democrats this time, but his own party?
Yes.
And then the question becomes, who in that party?
Well, what do they keep saying, Chip Rogers or that no one knows what Sonny's doing with his new pack and all his money, his newfound money. It could be a range of people that might, you never know what crazy Glenn Richardson might do. No, I think he's stuck on trying to be governor.
And you alluded to Sonny Perdue. If he smells blood in the water there, do you think he would actually challenge Chambliss?
No, because they know he's not a real Republican either.
Well, that's true. I don't know what he is.
he's like Mike Jacobs. You can't really give him a card, a Democrat card, a Republican card. You really don't know which team. Well, we know Jacobs isn't playing anymore for the Democrats. We are feeling clear that when he – did you read the blog? Jason Cecil went to a Young Republicans event that Mike Jacobs was headlining.
I see.
And Jason asked him, was he still pro-gay and pro-choice? And he got very frustrated and admitted that he still was in front of all his newfound young Republican friends.
Wow.
How do you think that one's going to play, Tim?
Well, now, what's going to happen to Jacobs? That's another one I want to ask you about. What's going to happen to him in the next election cycle?
Here's my personal opinion. It's just me. There's a couple people who think this way. I think we shouldn't even mess with him. We should... Because he continually said when he was a Democrat that he was voting because of his district, right?
Right.
So let's see what happens when he's forced to vote way more conservative, and he says, I'm doing it for my district. We used both years in 2010 against him and questioned his district. If he's using y'all's name as the cover, do y'all really feel this way? You know, you can pick out some slick mail material. Mike Jacobs said, my district said, kick kids off peach care. Is that how you guys really feel?
Wow. And have you heard of anyone in that district who's looking at that race?
I heard of a young guy, but really, if you're going to beat Mike Jacobs, they need a female in there.
Female.
Because, yeah, they need a female Democrat in there. And you need someone who has lived in that district. I think this guy who they said wanted to run hasn't lived in that district very long. He's not a part of the Young Democrats, which is the ones who really got Mike his success. I'm not sure how this guy is going to intend on winning, being he doesn't know the district nor the people. And he's not, you know, I just don't know how. I don't know if he plans on winning because he thinks he has a lot of money, but the district is, you know, the same way Young Democrats did for Mike, by getting out there and working their tails off and knocking on every door. That's the kind of momentum somebody else needs. Like, you need that group, again, to help support you.
Yeah, and it's going to be a presidential election year, too. There's going to be a lot more volunteers out in the field. It would seem like these volunteers could work in multiple campaigns and help the candidate in that race there.
That would be if you're, you know, connected with them. I mean, even in the DeKalb party, they sent, because I know we started a federal PAC and, you know, we helped a lot of candidates. We did multiple candidates and, you know, did a lot of work and just helping organize. We organized the canvassing efforts and had candidates just from all of DeKalb. You know, we had tons of volunteers and just gave them a stack of whichever candidate was there. We just said, hey, take these around. Here's your area. Here's all your canvassing material. I think that's the kind of activity that's going to need to happen in Georgia in 2008 in order to help our down-ballot candidates.
And speaking of statewide, we were hit with another bombshell recently when it began leaking out that Johnny Isaacson is perhaps looking at the governor's race in 2010. Now, that would throw a huge monkey wrench into the works, but I'm wondering, and this is what I want to ask you, do you think a lot of Republicans like Casey Cagle or Glenn Richardson, for instance, would complain too loudly, and the reason I ask is because they would notice that suddenly a U.S. Senate seat would open up?
I think Casey would be a good U.S. senator.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they would complain too loud. I think Glenn's eyes is still on that prize of governorship. Uh-huh. So I think what he will probably, he would run a campaign that Isaacson was out of touch with Georgia.
I see.
So
you think the speaker then would still challenge even if Johnny Isaacson was running?
Oh, definitely. I think he definitely would challenge because he'll have all his house dudes with him.
Could he beat him?
I think he could. We don't really hear what Johnny Isaacson is actually doing in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what he does.
No, I don't either. I unfortunately do know a lot about what the other one does because he tells us about it. But Isaacson's a low-keyed individual. I've noticed that his polling numbers or his approval numbers are higher than those of Saxby Chambliss. Of course, that's Chambliss's fault. But I just wonder, would Isaacson really make that jump from the U.S. Senate to the governorship of Georgia and why he would want to do that? I have heard.
But look at this one, Tim. His number of undecideds are higher than Saxby because no one really knows him.
Well, that could be because when you're as controversial a figure as Chambliss tends to be, people tend to form an opinion one way or the other about him. So it could be that. But I have heard that one reason Isaacson may be going to do this is family issues. He's got a big family, a lot of grandchildren. In the U.S. Senate, you're on the road all the time, whereas when you're the governor of Georgia, you're pretty much in Atlanta all the time. So it may make sense for him to do this. I know a lot of people have done this around the country over the years, headed from the Senate back to the State House. But then the question becomes, okay, who do the Democrats run?
Ooh, Tim, you just hurt my head on that one.
Oh.
Who are they running against Saxby was our first question.
Yeah.
I don't know, because that would be interesting, because we also have the governorship up also.
Yes, we do, and... You've got to wonder.
Is really, really. I mean, it's. I mean, that whole Mark and Kathy race. I mean, completely thinned our bench out.
Yeah, we had the two top Democrats in Georgia right there running against the other. And you don't know, Bernita, how many times, and I'm sure you did this too, every chance you got, I talked to both of those people and begged them to make a deal. Begged them not to do this, begged one or the other of them to wait, to await anything, and I just couldn't get anywhere with them.
Selfishness. It wasn't for the Democratic Party. It's what happens when you aspire for yourself more than you do for a cause.
Well, that's true. That's true. It is. I really wish that had shaken out another way because they bloodied each other up to such a point that the nomination they so dearly sought was not even worth having once one of them acquired it.
Yep. But maybe we can resurrect Kathy and run her for that U.S. Senate spot.
Well, you just
by then, she'll have the young Harris thing in her corner. She'll been out of politics. We'll be hungering for someone,
and
with good hunger comes, you know, good people who want to actually get out there and work for something.
And she's relatively young in political years, and obviously the Republicans are pretty worried about her, else they wouldn't have tried to get her to switch parties. They didn't try to get Taylor to switch parties. They tried to get her to switch parties because they were afraid of her.
Yep. And maybe Mark will make another run at governor. I mean, he's only tried it once.
That's
he
true.
He can make another run at governor, but do it a lot smarter than he did. And he has more, and especially if Isaacson ran for governor, I mean, he gets to bring in way more stuff about corruption and, you know, in evil Republican ways.
And one thing that would make it a little more even, it would be an open seat this time. He would not be seeking the office against a powerful and popular incumbent as he was before.
Yep. And he could get, you know, I mean, that really wouldn't be a bad, I mean, it wouldn't be bad for Mark to run again as governor if
that's
no one
true.
Else steps up.
That's very true. I was also going to mention, do you think Roy Barnes might dabble in things a little bit again? If not to run himself, if maybe to promote another candidate, and who might that be?
Has Roy stopped the latter one?
Well, that's true. I know he's around. I know he's busy.
I don't think he should run. I mean, not for a statewide. He had some serious people pissed off at him. It wasn't like he pissed off one sec. He pissed off the teachers.
Hello, who do we have on with us?
Oh, Tim, this is David. I just was heading down the road, thought I'd listen in.
Welcome back, buddy.
Yes, but I will tell you that I heard the tail end of that. I think Roy Barnes could run for a statewide seat, but now the 11th district, I don't think Roy Barnes is going to try that one on, given the unfriendly demographics.
I think he could run for that Cobb County Congress seat. I mean, I think he could.
Yeah,
I think he could run against, what is it, who is it, Price?
Well, if it was the old district, and also, I'm not so sure he lives in, I don't think he lives in Price's or Gingrey. Not that he has to, but he lives in Scott's district. But that would be another inhibitor. I mean, it would be just one more thing they could use against him. You know, King Roy thinking his kingdom's where his lines aren't. You know, you can just see it now. So,
well, that's a good one, David.
Well, you know, you could just see how they think.
I got the rat costume.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know about him running for statewide. I don't know. That's just my feelings. He's got enough research on him.
Yeah, I still think, though, that he wants to serve at some level somewhere. I don't think Roy Barnes wants to be through with Georgia politics. I don't know why I think that. I just don't think that he does. What do y'all think?
I don't think he should be either. I mean, I think he's a good Democrat.
Yes, and
yeah.
That poll that came out that Insider Advantage did showed him polling better against Saxby Chambliss than any other candidate we've had, Del Cardwell, Vernon Jones. I don't know if they've even polled on anybody else. To me, that would be the most encouraging sign to look at that race as opposed to others.
But is that poll based on name ID?
Well, at least you'd have that going in. I mean, that's...
Or would that poll that you mentioned encourage another big-name Democrat to jump right in there thinking, wait, I could beat this guy if Roy Barnes is polling that well against him?
Yeah, I mean, does that mean, does Max make a return? Does Wyke Orr get in? I mean, I think if Max or Wyke got in, I think Roy Barnes wouldn't get into the race.
Yes. But one thing, although Roy Barnes would have a money operation to put together the money that's required, like you telling us, I think earlier, that Del Cardwell, you know, raised $50,000, which, I mean, I know if I started tomorrow, I couldn't raise $50,000 in months, but that still obviously shows that there's a long way to go to raise the millions he'll need for this race. Roy Barnes would at least have that coming in. He could put that together quickly.
Well, that is true. I mean, if you look at, if you take that $50,000, even to the primary, I mean, that's a $600,000 that Caldwell, you know, may raise, minus, not including his burn rate.
Yes. Okay, David, I see the old clock is getting away from us a little bit. What I thought I would do right now is, I'm going to click on this other number down here. I believe somebody's with us. Hang on. Hello, who we got with us?
This is Wendy Davis. How are you
today? Hey, Wendy, how are you, girl?
I'm doing great, darling. How are you?
Just wonderful. Now, tell us where you are and what you're doing and what's going on there.
Well, I actually have just returned to Rome, Georgia. I don't know if you know, I've spent the last couple of months out in Mississippi. I was working on getting a new chief of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians elected. So the fellow who was involved in the Abramoff mess is no longer chief of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians, and Beasley Denson is their new chief and bringing new energy and change to that community that needs it. So it was an
interesting. That's where you've been.
Yeah, that's an exciting opportunity, and it was nice to poke Haley Barbour in the eye because he got involved in the runoff.
And I also understand, you may be jumping into one of the presidential campaigns. You want to tell us about that?
Indeed, I may. I haven't sealed the deal yet, but it looks like I'm going to be the Southern political director for Bill Richardson's presidential campaign.
Woohoo!
Wow!
Hey, Wendy!
Wow!
Very excited about it. So, what my first official task was to attend the DNC's Southern Caucus meeting this weekend in Charlotte, and David had asked me to call and let everybody know what had happened at the caucus meeting. So, if works in your schedule, would this be a good time for me to chat on about that?
Let's do that.
On.
Well, first of all, we at breakfast, they had a lovely reception Friday night, but at breakfast Saturday, James Clyburn, who's a congressman from South Carolina and the new whip for the party, for the Democrats, gave a really nice speech. He was introduced also by Congressman Watt. We were in his district there in North Carolina. And he talked about the fact that the minimum wage hike is going into effect this week. Actually next week, and so that's very exciting, and that they've just increased the funding for veterans care, and I really think we need to be getting the word out that the Democrats are really putting the money in their mouth as Republicans talk about patriotism and, you know, leave our soldiers under-equipped and leave our veterans to fend for themselves, and we're actually putting our words into action and trying to take care of particularly this new wave of veterans that we have who need medical care. We also were needing a new female executive committee member to represent the Southern Caucus, and it was a really interesting process in that we had three ladies running who were all very well qualified, and in the first round of balloting, you know, you would normally throw out the lowest vote getter and then vote till the top two then have a majority vote. Well, the second two vote getters tied.
Wow.
So, everything has to be just a little complicated. So then we had to have a vote between the second and second place finishers to figure out which was second and which was third. And then we debate whether we were going to do that by a show of hands or, you know, through the written ballots. And, of course, we ended up doing the written ballots. And so after all was said and done, Marie Prezioso from West Virginia is the new female executive committee member representing the Southern Caucus.
Now, Wendy.
Yes.
I've got a question. How does this information get out? Like there was a vote, there was an election, there was people who wanted to run.
Well, it's only open to people who are already on the DNC. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, our representatives from the DNC were at that meeting.
Oh, they were?
And to be really frank with you, when I tried to find out the information about the meeting, I spent a half an hour looking on the internet, and I could not find anywhere the details of this meeting. So I was a little bothered by that. But, I think our party should be having – I know although it's just a DNC meeting for DNC members, I think there are a lot of people, particularly in the Charlotte vicinity, who would really have enjoyed the panels that they had there that day. So just a lesson to us to make sure the word's getting out to more people.
Yeah, I think it would have been great if our DNC representatives would at least, so we could have, if you had feedback, to give them to take up the ladder. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Wouldn't that have been an interesting thing
I'm
to have
saying.
Happen?
I'm just
right.
saying.
Right. Well, I mean, the
forward.
Yeah. Then they had a faith and politics panel, which was really interesting. And then I brought some materials back, too, from the gentleman who spoke. He's with the DLCC, and they're the people who help organize candidates running for the legislature. And the good news there is that of all the legislative bodies across the U.S., the Democrats have 55 compared to the Republicans 41. So that's good news, and we need to keep moving in the right direction on that. But he had some great ideas for candidate recruitment and a nice handout on that, which I've brought back, which I'd be happy to share with folks. Then I think probably the most interesting to me was they had an Internet Politics in the Mainstream Media panel. And I say that's most interesting to me because I've been feeling very old lately, you know, with all this blogosphere stuff and the Facebook and MySpace. I've been, like, I had a, friend who emailed me and wanted me to be his friend on MySpace, and I was like, you know, really, can't I just send you an email? It seems like it would be easier to me. But after listening to this panel, I feel like, you know, maybe I ought to just get with the program, because it's not about just kids or young people or college people. It really is an exciting new tool. And, I mean, I know that in a lot of ways. I mean, every campaign has to have a website, and David and I have talked a lot about how fundraising via your website, one of the things that's so great about it is it's found money. You know, it's coming from people you wouldn't have made a phone call to or wouldn't have sent a direct mail solicitation to. And Steve Jarding, who had been the campaign manager for, I mean, senior advisor for Jim Webb when he ran for Senate, revealed that he had $5 million of his $5.8 million that he raised was from his website. I mean,
wow.
Was from online contributions. And, again, that's one of those figures that sort of hits you like the Dean figures did. And, I mean, like Barack Obama is currently showing us. And interestingly enough, I heard an NPR story today about how the Republicans just don't quite get it yet. So I'm glad we're ahead of them in one one area.
Well, you know, Georgia has its own social media forum called The Donkey and the Elephant.
Yes. And see, I haven't been hit
enough
to get with that. So I gotta do that. I gotta get with the program and act young, and maybe I will feel younger.
Well, listen, Wendy, the clock's about to run out on our hour here,
okay.
So we're gonna bid you adieu. We thank you for calling, and please, if you get that job with Richardson, we want you back on the Kudzu Vine to tell us all about it.
Happy
Come
to
on,
do it.
Tell
Good
us
to
about
talk
it. Tell us when you need volunteers. Let us know what's going on.
Sure will.
Okay.
Thanks so much, y'all.
Thank you a lot.
Bye-bye.
David, how about I go ahead and give my outrage of the week, and we'll let you close this thing out.
Absolutely.
Okay, this very morning I heard Republican Dick Williams say he was stunned to see Democrats in the U.S. House vote to pull out of Iraq after terrorist attacks on the
United States.
I thought, what is this fool talking about now? Of course, the others on that Republican Georgia gang chimed in with the usual statements like, we're handing the enemy a calendar. And I remember all too well what happened when we left Vietnam, blah, 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 and the liberals covered it up. And then there was my personal favorite, Georgia is different from the rest of the nation. Now, I know that's an outright lie, since polls say that over half this state's citizens want us out of Iraq. But I just couldn't quit thinking about what Williams said and why he said to lose his strength. But then it hit me.
Last Thursday, President Bush said
the same folks who are fighting us in Iraq are the same folks who attacked us on 9/11. And once again, the Republicans are dragging out that worn-out argument of theirs. And I have bad news for them. Nobody believes that any longer. I am constantly amazed at how Williams, the administration, and other Republicans talk about the situation in Iraq. They talk incessantly about military victory as if talking about it might make it happen. Why would they do this? Aren't the deaths of over 3,600 soldiers and the squandering of hundreds of billions of dollars weighing on them at all? Is the simple fact that things are worse now in Iraq than they were 4 years ago not obvious to them as it is to the rest of the country? No, I guess not. Instead, we hear, give us more time. No more time. Time is a luxury that this more of the same policy no longer has. All of the worthless points this administration makes have come to be expected, I suppose. But why every Sunday morning at 9:30, when I tune in hoping to hear about Georgia politics, do I hear instead Dick Williams saying the same stuff? Well, I guess that's because that's what all that parrots know to do. It's time that somebody got in Dick Williams' face. Or, better yet, let's feed him a cracker, David.
Thank you again, Tim. I think it was a great show, and I want to thank all of our guests for coming on. The biggest mistake we made is we didn't have Wendy call in earlier, so she could tell us even more. But another great show, Tim. You just did an excellent job taking over the board for me. Thank you and Benita for filling in and the slow weak spots for me.
Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Be on the
Cousin Line. Next week.
Okay.